Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, April 29th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Supes learn of Soham's tourism promotion efforts, missing man found, and World War II veteran George Mullins turns 100 years old today. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. We have an update to a missing person story we reported on yesterday. Michael Klepp, the 64-year-old Fort Bragg man who had been missing since Thursday evening, has been found alive and well. Klepp was last seen around 7 p.m. on April 24th near the intersection of Main Street and Laurel Street in Fort Bragg. His sudden disappearance prompted a widespread search and concern throughout the community. According to the Fort Bragg Police Department, Klepp was located safely on Monday. As Klepp is no longer a missing person, no further update is available regarding the circumstances of his disappearance. Turning to supervisors information, Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors fielded presentations on how Southern Humboldt's visitor promoting groups have boosted tourism. Daniel Mintz reports.
Southern Humboldt's economy is struggling, but its tourism marketing is strong with event sponsorship, social media promotion, and partnerships. Soham's visitor promoting agencies updated the county's Board of Supervisors last week, part of a series of annual reports on use of tourism-related funding from Measure J, the county's hotel bed tax. The Humboldt Creative Alliance has supported a variety of Southern Humboldt events, including the Redwood Playhouse Phoenix Rising Festival, KMUD Southern Humboldt Pride Event, and Open Horizons Garberville Haunted Hoop. Southern Humboldt Business and Visitors Bureau Operations Director Laura Lassiter said the Bureau promotes tourism through robust social media presence, but it also does the job through events and office visits.
The SHBVB participated in the Barrier Travel Show, Humboldt's Gateway to the Redwood Skating Rink, sponsored by the Humboldt Lodging Alliance. The rink welcomed nearly 3,000 visitors, out of town and local, multiple zip codes, nearly 187,000 organic views during the December time period. Also, the Soham Classic Car Show, Humboldt's hometown for the holidays, visitor engagement. SHBVB maintains a central office in downtown Garberville, which also features a certified rack. While the office occasionally welcomes walk-in visitors, the SHBVB's broader role extends far beyond the physical location. We are not limited to in-office inquiries. Each year, contacting events, trade shows, conferences, regional activities. These high-touch interactions increase destination visibility.
The Southern Humboldt Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Center has also sponsored local events, including Southern Humboldt Community Park's Picnic in the Park, KMUD's Pride event, and the Mateel Community Center's Reggae on the River Festival. Chamber Executive Director Yvonne Hendricks talked about event sponsorships and how the Chamber promotes tourism.
This year, the Southern Humboldt Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center is dedicated to supporting our community and is proud to sponsor some of its most cherished events. We understand the vital role that these organizations' events play in promoting economic growth and prosperity within our community. Through our sponsorship, we help fund programs that have a direct and positive impact on our community's health and well-being. And so that shows the events that we sponsored in 2024 and the events that we're sponsoring in 2025. And we co-produced the Czech Puppet Theater earlier this year with the Mateel Community Center. It was a family-friendly event, and approximately 250 people attended that. We also do advertising and marketing and media campaigns. So the Southern Humboldt Chamber of Commerce develops its annual advertising schedule around seasonal visitor trends. Each ad placement is tailored to fit the specific medium, platform, target demographics, and editorial calendar to maximize impact and engagement.
The Chamber also partnered with the Eureka Chamber of Commerce and the North Coast Small Business Development Center on digital marketing workshops. Supervisor Natalie Arroyo said the county gets a bang for its Measure J buck with the funding.
You know, I just really see how far you're able to stretch the dollars. I know we all would love for it to be greater, but it's really impressive to see. You know, I don't think we always have the ability to stretch it quite that far. I love to think we're agile, but you know, you are our agile partners in the community who help stretch those pennies to every last corner of the county, and it's really impressive, so thank you.
Later in the meeting, supervisors approved Measure J spending for the fiscal year beginning July 1st. That includes sustaining the $71,000 contribution to the Bureau and $131,000 to the Chamber. The board chose not to renew its tourism marketing contract with the Humboldt County Convention and Visitors Bureau and allocated the $145,000 saved to the county's Economic Development Division and the Project Trellis Cannabis Business Assistance Program. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Starting May 1st, CAL FIRE burn permits will once again be required for hazard reduction burning in state responsibility areas across both the Humboldt, Del Norte, and Mendocino units. In Mendocino County, CAL FIRE officials say permits are mandatory for any property owners planning to conduct hazard reduction burns. Permits can now be obtained online at burnpermit.fire.ca.gov, where applicants will watch a short safety video and complete an application. The permits are free but must be renewed annually and either printed or kept digitally on hand during a burn. CAL FIRE Mendocino reminds residents that all burn day status information is controlled by the Mendocino County Air Quality Management District. Property owners are responsible for checking conditions before lighting any piles. Officials stress that safety rules must be followed at all times, including clearing at least 10 feet down to bare soil around all piles, having water and a shovel on hand, and ensuring an adult is present. In neighboring Humboldt and Del Norte counties, burn permits are also required starting May 1st for any burning in state responsibility areas. The North Coast Unified Air Quality Management District requires a separate air quality permit year-round, and more information on those can be found at ncuaqmd.org. Officials in the Humboldt-Del Norte unit are urging the public to take fire safety seriously. Each year, the unit responds to escape debris burns caused by unsafe practices, such as leaving fires unattended, failing to clear around the pile, or burning in windy conditions. These are all violations of the permit and can result in serious penalties. Another key reminder, landowners must report their planned burns each day before igniting. Failing to do so could lead to unnecessary responses from emergency crews and a waste of local resources, including those of volunteer firefighters. For more on fire-safe burning practices and permit requirements, visit readyforwildfire.org. Questions for CAL FIRE Humboldt-Del Norte can be directed to 707-726-1285, and for Mendocino County residents, the burn day info line is 707-463-4391. Local Southern Humboldt veteran George Mullins has turned 100 years old today. Mullins was on the beaches of Normandy on D-Day as a young man serving his country to defeat Hitler and the Nazi regime. KMUD News' Lauren Schmidt sat with the local hero for an interview about turning 100 and his thoughts on the U.S. today.
So, George, you are turning 100 years old. How does that feel?
It feels like I'm 100 years old. Well, I got the bruises and the hurts all over, just like everybody else. Been a long road, and some of it's been rough, some of it's been good.
2024 was the 80th anniversary of D-Day.
This will be the 81st, won't it? I went over to Bastogne this last winter, too.
Are you still traveling?
Well, they got me all set up to go 10th of June. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know when I'm going to give that up, but I think I'll go until I can't go anymore. Some people, it seems like it really hurts them or something. I just go down, I just go to sleep. I like airplanes. You know, I'm a pilot myself. After I lived here, I bought my own plane and learned how to fly. I've did a lot of things in my life. Fished, got out there and fished. That was with one of the mosquito fleet. Is the Lucy boat. I've still got the boat. I'll just put the prop on it. I'm planning on selling it as soon as I can get it. A few things has got to be did. It's a nice boat.
How many years have you spent in Garberville?
I came here from 1960. This is a little paradise on earth. That's what I seen in it then, and that's what I see in it now. You don't find a place like this in every way. The people make the place. Yeah, they give me a chance to get out of the ditch, and I work for just about every old person around here.
What's your secret?
I try to, if I can afford it or go and buy it, if I can get somewhere, is fishes. Is one of the person I believe should eat. And a good diet. This junk food won't work. I contribute my long life as a rough way of coming up, living, and from the earth. You have a garden, you can't be beat. And think if people that land the waste in the backyard, they should have their vegetables. You can raise a lot of stuff in it. Small place. I don't know. Stress will kill you. Ever what it is, try to get rid of the stress.
George, there's a lot going on in politics, and I know it troubles you greatly, so I'm wondering, as you blow out your candles, what wish would you give?
I wish they'd get rid of the dictator, and I don't care how they get rid of him. I don't know what's the matter with this country. I can never imagine in my life that this country would elect a dictator for a president. I blame the people. They'll pay for it, too. The people that voted for him. We got some good people here, and we got some. I don't know what's the matter with her. Whatever happened to common sense?
What would you wish people to do? You know, for your birthday, what would you call on people to do?
They can't undo what they've already did. I don't know how they're going to undo. They've got him. I don't know what they're going to do with him for 4 years anyway. That troubles me. All of this troubles me because I'd put one dictator. Boy, I'm upset. I am upset. I try to get my mind off of that. It's not all Trump's fault. It's people that have elected him there. It's a process. Why didn't they choose a better one? I don't know. I don't know what's the matter with them. I'm strictly against prejudice because we're all people. And, man, I'll tell you, look what he's did with thousands of people. Each one of them should have been going to trial before they ever were taken out. Look how many innocent people, they haven't did anything, and they're in prison. That's a dictator for you. Same thing is happening in Europe. Because in Europe, Hitler, he'd already had me on the stretching board. I'm a resistor, and he got rid of the resistors.
George, a lot of people weren't around in this era. So many of our World War II vets are no longer with us and people forget the history, but you actually have a book people can get right now to see really what you were up against in destroying fascism.
And we've did real good in the sales of the book. If my ghostwriter hasn't stretched the fish a little bit, we've sold about 1,000 books during this election and all that. Pretty good with just an old boy with a little story.
George's autobiographical book, Foxhole, shares the gripping account of young George's time in the military. George donates some of the proceeds of his book to an orphanage in Mexico.
What made you decide to donate it to an orphanage in Mexico?
My wife, Lucy, she watched her little sister starve to death. And I dedicated this to Lucy.
A true hero and a continued example of people making a difference in other people's lives, we here at KMOD say thank you and happy birthday, George.
Happy birthday, 100 years old. You are my hero. You're our community's hero. And we're just so grateful that we have you, George.
In state news, legislative hearing today on bill to extend end-of-life option act. Suzanne Potter reports.
A bill to make medical aid in dying permanently legal in California goes before the state Senate Judiciary Committee today. The End-of-Life Option Act is currently set to sunset in 2031, so Senate Bill 403 would remove that expiration date. Leslie Chinchilla with the Compassion and Choices Action Network says the basics of the law remain in force.
You have to be terminally ill. You have to have the prognosis of 6 months or less to live. And that has to be confirmed by two physicians. And you do have to be an adult 18 years or older. And you have to be a California resident.
The patient must also be of sound mind and must take the medication unassisted. Since the law went into effect in 2016, more than 6,500 Californians have obtained the prescription, and just under 66% died from ingesting the medications. Chinchilla adds that it is now legal for terminally ill patients to end their suffering through medical aid in dying in 10 states plus the District of Columbia.
It's really important to note that in all the years that medical aid in dying has been legal, there hasn't been a single reported case of abuse of the law. The law is working as intended.
Opponents of medical aid in dying often cite religious objections. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Fears of ICE overreach escalate as Trump signs new orders targeting sanctuary jurisdictions. KPFA's David Hummel brings you the details.
White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt announced new executive actions, marking 100 days of the second Trump presidency, which she called the beginning stages of the largest deportation campaign in American history.
The first EO will strengthen and unleash America's law enforcement to pursue criminals and protect innocent citizens. The second EO is centered around protecting American communities from criminal aliens, and it will direct the Attorney General and Secretary of Homeland Security to publish a list of state and local jurisdictions that obstruct the enforcement of federal immigration laws.
Sanctuary cities are municipalities with laws that limit the way in which local authorities can cooperate with ICE. The Sanctuary City Executive Order threatens to cut off certain federal funds to those jurisdictions placed on the Attorney General's list and calls for tightening eligibility rules for federal benefits in those areas. It also instructs the Justice Department to challenge state or local laws that unlawfully favor undocumented immigrants over U.S. citizens. The executive orders come a week after a federal judge in San Francisco barred the Trump administration from withholding federal funds to sanctuary cities. Courts are critical that the new order holds more legal merit. Meanwhile, Trump's border czar Tom Homan doubled down on the decision to prosecute individuals obstructing ICE, following the FBI's illegal arrest of Milwaukee Circuit Court Judge Hannah Dugan last Friday.
You can sit aside and watch, you can argue against us all you want and protest all you want, but when you cross that line, I've said this 1,000 times, when you cross that line to impediment or knowingly harboring, concealing an illegal alien from ICE, you will be prosecuted, judge or not.
Dugan had ushered Eduardo Flores Ruiz, a defendant in her courtroom and an undocumented immigrant, out of the courtroom with his attorney after ICE came to arrest Ruiz. Critics of ICE say that the fear of ICE raids in protected spaces prevents people from seeking or providing essential services. In an interview with NPR, Wisconsin Democratic State Representative and former colleague of Dugan, Ryan Clancy, says that ICE had no place in approaching Ruiz in the courthouse.
They absolutely should not be going into courtrooms. It has a really profound and negative chilling effect. Courthouses and courtrooms specifically have been protected spaces, just like operating rooms, classrooms. You don't want law enforcement. You don't want ICE specifically operating without impunity in those areas. And my concern here, and we've already started to see this, is that people who would normally be willingly participating in the justice system are now you know, going to think twice if they think that, you know, showing up either as a defendant or a witness may lead to their own arrest.
Courthouses and courtrooms, like classrooms, hospital rooms, and places of worship, have historically been inaccessible to federal authorities until a January 20th Trump executive order had reversed that prohibition. Clancy noted that ICE still does not have the authority to operate in these spaces without a signed judicial warrant.
They did not have a real warrant signed by a real judge. Essentially, an administrative warrant from ICE is a piece of paper that they produce themselves saying they can do what they want. It doesn't have the same power as an actual warrant does. Judge Dugan, as a judge herself, apparently realized that and did what I hope any of us would do, which is standing up for members of our community who are being targeted by the Trump regime.
Camilo Perez Bustillo is a human rights lawyer, coordinator of the National Lawyers Guild, and professor of ethnic studies at St. Mary's College in California. Bustillo said that in the face of increasing attacks by the Trump administration and ICE, it is sanctuary communities which keep people safe.
ICE is going to be committing, ICE and the Border Patrol, you know, depending, are going to be committing human rights violations. They should not have the cooperation and complicity of local authorities, and that's what sanctuary means in practice. Bottom line is what we have to have is community-based mobilization and resistance. And so we have to rise up in the spirit of sanctuary and create sanctuary communities, you know, regardless of whatever resolutions have been adopted. At this moment, we are all immigrants and we are all vulnerable. And we have to stand up for everyone.
Reporting for KPFA News, I'm David Hummel.
In international news, Israeli strike kill at least 44 in Gaza as international court reviews aid blockade. KPFA's Eileen Alfandari brings you the details.
Palestinian ambassador to the Netherlands, Amar Hijazi, told the International Court of Justice that Israel is violating international law with its military strikes in Gaza and its refusal to let food or other humanitarian aid into the territory.
As I address you today, the Palestinian people are being starved, bombed, and forcibly displaced by Israel, their unlawful occupier. Israel has not allowed food, water, medicine, and medical supplies or fuel into Gaza for the past 2 months.
Hijazi noted that on 3 separate occasions in the past, the International Court of Justice has issued provisional rulings ordering Israel to ensure and facilitate the unimpeded flow of humanitarian assistance into Gaza. Israel has flouted those rulings. It is not participating in these latest proceedings. Foreign Minister Gideon Saar denounced the hearing as a circus.
Israel decided not to take part in this circus. It is another attempt to politicize and abuse the legal process in order to persecute Israel. The goal is to deprive Israel of its most basic right to defend itself.
The United States will participate on Wednesday. No humanitarian or commercial supplies have entered Gaza for more than 7 weeks, as Israel has closed all main border crossing points. It is the longest closure the Gaza Strip has ever faced. On Friday, the World Food Program said it had delivered its last remaining food stocks to kitchens in Gaza, providing hot meals. The United Nations says thousands of children already have become malnourished. Most people are barely eating one meal a day. United Nations Undersecretary General for Legal Affairs Eleanor Hammarskjöld said Israel has a legal obligation to get aid into Gaza. She also said Israel is legally required to protect United Nations workers there, nearly 300 of whom have been killed.
Under international law, including international humanitarian law, humanitarian relief personnel, medical personnel, and United Nations personnel must be respected and protected. As such, attacks may not be directed against such personnel.
The United Nations General Assembly has asked the International Court for an advisory opinion on what Israel's obligations are as an occupying power and member of the United Nations. But the wheels of the court grind slowly.
An advisory opinion isn't expected for months, and Israel is likely to ignore it anyway, as it has previous rulings. Still, Palestinian UN Ambassador Riyad Mansour told the court there is an alternative vision to the cycle of death and destruction in Palestine.
Where parents do not live in fear, where children do not discover death before they had a chance to experience life. That alternative vision is why humanity enacted rules and established courts. We are here because the General Assembly needs your guidance to advance justice. We are here as millions of Palestinians, in particular, 2 million plus in Gaza, half of them children, pay the ultimate price. Help us deliver justice.
I'm Eileen Alfandari for KPFA News.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Lauren Schmidt, Suzanne Potter, and Eileen Alfandari. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.